All right, so we're recording. So have you been here? When you know we're going over the fruits of the Spirit this year. For the men's breakfast, we're trying to do a series of applicable traits, obviously from Scripture. So we went over the armor of God last year. We went over several little things last year, but this year we did the fruits of the Spirit out of Galatians 5. If you want to turn over there. This is our fifth week in, or our fifth month, I guess. Jason covered the first one, which was love. You know, to all of these attributes or characteristic traits are an image of Christ, which what we're supposed to be like. Jason taught us, you know, how to love like Christ, even when we don't want to. Britton taught on joy, you know, to be joyful, and there's one true way to be truly joyful, and that's to have Christ in the center and Christ in your heart, which is salvation. Chris Cohen taught on peace. You know, once again, there's one true way to have peace. The world offers you temporary peace and temporary joy. Christ offers you eternal peace and eternal joy, because this is nothing but a vapor. So, we learned that how to focus on our internal and eternity peace. Last month, James Horton taught on long-suffering. That gentleman is a great example of what long-suffering is. Of course, everybody has a testimony of long-suffering. You just happen to see it more in James than you do a lot of other people, physically and mentally. But, you know, everybody goes through something that is equal to long-suffering. Whether it's as dramatic as the one person or the next, it doesn't matter. When I'm training people at work, you know, one thing that I like to quote and always try to live by is the fact of keeping in mind that you will never grow during the easy times, whether it's spiritually or physically. You will never grow through the easy times because you're not out of your comfort zone. When you are in hard times, you're aware. You're more observant. And you are observant on application and how to apply to stay out of those moments and out of those situations. When you're in the easy times, you're comfortable. You're at peace. So I always like to say that you will never grow during the easy times. So when you're going through a battle, when you're going through something that is detrimental or just unbearing or just weighs a lot, there's something in there that God's teaching you. And, you know, sometimes it's not in our perspective to see it or to acknowledge it until later on, but always keep in mind that, when you go through long suffering, there's always a lesson in everything. And so to keep that open. So, Galatians 5, starting in verse 22, it says, "But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long suffering, gentleness," which we're going to cover today, "goodness, faith, meekness, temperance. Against such there is no law. And they that are at Christ have crucified the flesh with the affections and lusts. If we live in the Spirit, let us also walk in the Spirit. Let us not be desirous of vainglory, provoking one another, envying one another." I'm going to pray real quick. Father, just thank you for this time. Thank you for your word. Just pray today, as I know I'm trying to rush through this, but just pray that you slow my words and you just speak to us. This is a great lesson for me to be gentle. And I just thank you for your lessons. I thank you for your word and to be able to apply it and giving me the ability to learn from it and to apply these things. So not just be a hearer of the word, but be a doer. And I just thank you for the opportunity and we love you. Amen. So the fruit, you know, the fruit of the Spirit. Fruit is, you know, when we always hear the word fruit, if you're a farmer, of course you hear the word fruit typically. But I am not a farmer, unfortunately. And so when I hear the word fruit, it's the fruit of the Spirit. It's, you know, discipleship is fruit. You know, JB had a gentleman that got baptized a couple weeks ago because that's fruit from discipleship. You know, he was investing his time and he was investing his soul into another person for discipleship to train them. And they caught on to realize that they were never saved. And then they got saved and then they got baptized. That's fruit, you know. And everybody always thinks, well, I don't have any fruit because I've never led anybody to Christ. That's not the case. That's not just that fruit. That is fruit, but when it comes to fruit, it is more than that. It is, what are you investing your time in? What ministry are you in? You know, are you doing CSA? Are you doing this? Are you doing that? You know, Heartland is a busy church. There's always something to do somewhere. There's always an event. Are you attending that event? Are you spreading the gospel? Are you going to work? There's fruit at work. You know, it's, whether it's low hanging fruit is somebody that's ready to just, that comes to you and is ready to accept Christ. That's really low hanging fruit. Not a lot of effort on your end, but God has really prepared them for that moment and you're a part of that divine appointment. That's low hanging fruit because they came to you. There was really no labor put involved. But, you know, high hanging fruit is you got to work for it. And not everything comes easy. Like, once again, you don't grow through the hard times. Go to the high street or go in the high street in London. Or we got a team in the Dominican Republic right now where it's hot. Like, you think it's hot here, go over there. You know, and they're currently facing hardship and long suffering as a country. And that involves the minister or missionaries that are there. And, you know, the first day they were there, they had like 10 salvations. Like that is fruit, but we have to concentrate on that. That took labor, that took money, that took time for them to go over there to do that because they're obedient. Fruit usually takes obedience. It takes open doors. Currently I work with a girl that was a part of, we had a Christmas deal in Garden City and she was one of the very few people that showed up. That's fruit though, but she was raised Catholic. She's very, very, I wouldn't say active, but she's a very much a believer in the Catholic faith. That takes labor, not to convince her otherwise, but to just be persistent and consistent. Just to be consistent as Christ was. Christ didn't cram things down people's throat. He was just consistent. He is the most consistent thing we could ever have in our lives. And he did not just yell at people because they didn't want to turn their faith to him. He was patient and he was waiting for them. You know, we all have free will. And so that's the part of the fruit of the Spirit is to have these things to profit his kingdom. If you read through the list again, these are all Christ-like characteristics. You know, once again, love, and I could go through the list again if I had time, but it's not just knowing those things, but he had to apply them. To be an image of Christ, it takes application, it takes sacrifice, and it takes time to allow Christ to change those said things in your life. I didn't get saved, and the next day I was a very patient person. I didn't get saved, and the next day I loved everyone. I didn't get saved and have, you know, the next day I had a massive peace on my shoulders. No. Everything takes time, but it's how long are you willing to hold on to that time? How long are you willing to hold out and go through the hard times? You know, once again, you don't grow through the easy times. How long are you willing to go through those trenches to wait for that peace, to wait for God to handle your situation? And so to me, that's the fruits of the Spirit are the foundation. You know, when you build a house, you have to have a solid foundation. Otherwise it will crumble. You know, read Proverbs that tells you build your house on solid foundation. That's, we are the house. It's our spiritual life has to be built on that solid foundation. Christ is that solid foundation. And when you're not reading or when you're not praying or when you're not investing or being obedient, you're not investing time into that foundation. You're building your house on sand. I work with aggregate enough to know that if you build a house on sand and water comes, your house will not be there. I can guarantee it because sand goes with the current of water. But if you built it on concrete doesn't move with water typically. So it's that having that solid foundation. So, you know, it says in verse 25, it says, if we live in the Spirit, let us also walk in the Spirit. So it's not just living it, which is knowledge. Everybody sits in here or even reads your Bible. You see these things and you know these things. That's what I call head knowledge. But it also says, let us walk in the Spirit. That's application. You know, that it's the difference between knowledge and wisdom. Knowledge is all head. It's all knowing what it is. But wisdom is application. It's applying it in your life specifically, or your household, or your family, or your kids. You know, Proverbs 22:6 tells us that it's generational. Train your kids up in the way they should go. And when they get old, they will not depart from it. You know, I have 5 kids. That is five other households that I am handing this down to. Because they'll hand it, you know, they'll take it to their house when they move out, and when they become adults, then they get married, then they have kids. Guess what? It branches out to their households. You know, whatever I teach them is what's going to be handed down. So what am I teaching my children? And it's taken me a lot of years to realize that. That's just the way it is. I learned the hard way. That's what I call school of hard knocks. Just the way it is. But what we teach them, but it's not, even if you don't have kids, discipleship is an investment. It's the same. You know, Bob could be discipling someone. Bob, you don't have kids, right? Do you have kids? You have two.
Two.
Okay.
Five grandkids, three great.
There you go. See, he's got a whole list of people that he's handing things down to. If you don't have kids, but it's the same as discipleship. You know, that is your child. That is your spiritual child that you are investing your time into. What you hand down to them, they're going to hand down to the person they teach. And then they hand down the person they teach. So it's always, not only is it biblical, but it's also smart to know what you're teaching. And you don't know what you're teaching if you don't know this book. If you're not reading the book, if you're not know, you know, this is how we establish that foundation with Christ. And handing that down is reading this book. Because what you hand down to your discipler, they're going to hand down to theirs. And then they're going to hand down to theirs. So if it is blasphemy, well, then you're just handing that down generation to generation. So we got to really keep that in mind to walk in the spirit and not in the flesh. So today we're going to cover gentleness, really quick-like. But the gentleness in the Webster's 1828 definition is softness of manners, mildness of temper, sweetness of disposition, meekness, kindness, tenderness. So I obviously, you know, have always been called the gentle giant because, you know, I obviously am a little bigger, a little taller, but I happen to, while we're in public, especially if I have Holly and the kids with me, I tend to carry this demeanor, that I'm not so friendly because I'm, you know, observant and protective of my wife and my kids. But outside of that, I typically giggle at everything, and I'm not a mean person. In fact, I am non-confrontational, so that's just the way it is. People at work call me a gentle giant once they realize that I am no harm. It's just the way it is. Not to boast of myself, God just made me that way. He made me to look mean, but I'm not. But gentleness is more than just that. And we're going to cover two Christ-like ways that we can apply gentleness. How can we be gentle? The first one is we must have gentle words. You know, once again, have children and that kind of brings out the anger, the wrath. Have twins and that brings it out double time. Our twins are a whole different breed. They are on a different level than my other three kids were. Our other three kids compared to them were simple. They, you know, for a year, they cried, they were hungry, or they pooped. That was it. Or they were tired. That was the easy high life road there. So, you know, after you fed them or changed them or put them down for a nap, they quit crying. Simple. The twins were a different situation to where it's just two of them. And you don't think, well, what's one more? Well, it's a lot. And, you know, I'm a twin myself, so I know what my mom kind of went through. But, you know, the twins will help bring out that anger and that wrath when they get into things. And then, you know, you go to figure out to discipline. That's what I still run into today, and they're five. When I go to discipline them because they got into something or whatever the case is, and they both look at me and go like this at the same time. Every single time. You ask them, who did that? Unless you catch them in the act. Of course, that's red-handed. But if you don't, and you go to ask them, exactly like this. They point right at each other and say the other one did it. And they're very firm in that. To where it's very difficult as a parent to discipline. Because you don't know who to discipline. You don't want to spank the child that did not do anything wrong. But you don't know who that child is. So, that brings out you know, Proverbs 51, it says, a soft answer turneth away wrath, but grievous words stir up anger. So that's, of course, a physical, fleshy anger. But what does that look like spiritually? Because obviously we're supposed to be like Christ spiritually. Ephesians 4:29 says, "Let no corrupt communication proceed out of your mouth, but that which is good to the use of edifying, that is that it may minister grace unto the hearers." So another thing I've had to learn is not only do my kids see everything that I do, and then I'm handing down what I'm handing down generationally, but it's everyone around me. It's not even just in this church. Everyone at work, every moment, there's always somebody watching you. There's always, and especially if you announce that you are a Christian, no matter what denomination, if you say that you are a Christian, you are under a magnifying glass, because they are going to find everything they can to call you a hypocrite. You know, you say that you're a Christian, but you go over here and you do this. That's hypocrisy. You know, well, that's why I don't follow the churches, because they're so strict and you're over here breaking the rules. That's hypocrisy. You are under a magnifying glass, unknowingly. So I've learned that I'm going to, when we started coming here, and of course I never really had an issue with this, but I have known certain people that have done this, where they come to church and they're active in the church, but they're somebody completely different outside, because they have a reputation to uphold to out here that they've already established in the world, but then they're also trying to do this. They're trying to live both worlds, the best of both worlds. I've never really had an issue with it. I've always just kind of been who I am, regardless of where I'm at. It's much easier. It's less exhausting, because you start living the two lives and they're going to rumble together. And that's just the way it is. One's going to leak over to the other. So which one are you going to feed? You know, in Psalms, it tells us that the cup runneth over. What are you filling your cup with, spiritually or worldly? And then whatever you fill your cup up with, and it's overflowing of that said thing, that's what's going to show in your life. And, you know, I could go to my boss or people I work with, and they can stand there and say that, yeah, I screw up a lot. You know, sometimes I don't choose the right words to say. Sometimes I cuss. But me as a person, I will never lie for my job just to get to make money. I'm a terrible salesman. I would be a terrible salesman, because I'm not going to lie to profit. It's just not going to happen. I'm very truthful. I'm very honest. My stuff done is to my the stuff that the testing that I run is done by the book, because that's what we're supposed to do. Among other things, they can, you know, they've been to my house on a personal note too, outside of work and outside of church. And they see that my house is ran the same as my work life, my career. I'm not a different person. And sometimes that blows people away, because that's really bold. Like, that's a really bold thing to do, because you're going to face that long suffering. You're going to face that person who's going to just eat away at you, because they want you to break. They want you to turn back to the world. Satan loves that. He hates it when you're profiting his kingdom, or Christ's kingdom. So grace unto the hearers is that people will always be listening and people will always be watching. It's just the way it is. Colossians 4:6 says, "Let your speech be always with grace, seasoned with salt, and that ye may know how ye ought to answer every man." Do I know how to answer every person that comes to me with a problem, or even, you know, hey, why does the Bible say this and we do this and do this? No, I don't have an answer. But you know who did, obviously, was Christ. But we have the resources here to get those answers. We have the resources here to get the ability and to learn the ability to study it out. You know, it's not, once again, it's not all just head knowledge. God brought us in here. He took us through D1, D2, had a disciple, all in a really quick fashion. And then I was in HBI. And that is huge. But it's all being prepared. We're supposed to be prepared for wherever God takes us. So I don't know where God's taking my family personally. But I know that I am going to try to be in some training session, some class of some sort, to just be prepared. Because I'm not going to quit reading. Because God hasn't moved my family yet. Like, no. I will sit here. We will read the Bible. We will try to go to classes. We will do whatever we need to just to stay in the Word and to stay in training. Did I know everything after I left HBI? No. No, I did not. I walked away knowing what God wanted me to know, because that was, a word overload is kind of aggressive, but that's kind of what it is essentially. It was overloading and overwhelming to go there because it's a lot of head knowledge. But I didn't go in expecting to walk away knowing everything. I just wanted to know what God wanted me to know for where I'm going. What are you preparing me for specifically, and how are you preparing me to go wherever you're calling us to go? That's what I want to know. So it wasn't the fact of knowing everything as much as possible. It was just to be prepared. And then Psalms 19:14 says, "Let the words of my mouth and the meditation of or my heart be acceptable in the sight, O Lord, my strength and my redeemer." To be acceptable, it's our words. It's our tone of voice. You know, even through text messages, I have this. I like to say it's like my strong suit is to be able to tell when somebody's upset with me. It's to be able to tell, you know, if something is going on and they're just not wanting to express it. I'm pretty observant towards body motions. I'm pretty observant towards emotions in other people, that if there's an issue, I can usually just kind of hear it or see it before it's revealed. I'm nobody special. I'm just an observant person, or I try to be. But it's the fact of, it's being able to just understand where another person is at and be able to meet them halfway. And of Christ, like I said, Christ is that example that we have to be able to know and understand people's emotions. Once again, we all have free will and we all have, you know, whatever intentions, but it's the meditation of our heart is where it stems from. It's our heart. It's our passion. You know, what are we pouring our heart into? What are we filling our time with? Are we passionate about it? If you go to other ministries, you know, of course, everybody's passion is on a different level. You know, my passion for men in the men's ministry is very high. My passion is very deep. And that really stems from my testimony with my own dad. Wasn't around after 5 years old, so I didn't have a dad. You know, he was military, so he traveled, and we moved here to Missouri at 5 years old. And, you know, my mom tried to fill the voids with stepdads and whatnot, but my biological father was not around physically or actually in any way other than phone calls and stuff. And my passion comes from knowing and trying my hardest to where my kids don't face that. Because that was rough. You know, it was fun to an extent because I was missing a parent. Of course, as a 16, 15, you know, a teenager up to my early adulthood, I didn't have that parents around to tell me no. I could pretty well do whatever I wanted to, which resulted in who I am today. Yes, of course, everything happens for a reason. But I didn't have a guy to teach me how to shave. I didn't have a guy to teach me anything about how to be a husband or to be a father. You know, my example was him leaving at 5. That was the example I had. And I was not going to follow that example. When we found out we were pregnant with him, I told Holly, because we weren't married, we weren't a part of the church, but I told her, I'm like, I'm not out now. I'm in for life. Whether I sleep on your couch or whatever the case is, if we don't work out, I'm not going to be around. It's just not going to happen. Sorry. I will sleep in the garage. Like, I'm not going to not be a part of his life because I went through that. You know, and my wife kind of went through a similar testimony. Like, we don't have dads around. And that impacts a lot because it's a lot of lessons and a lot of teaching that I just didn't have. I didn't have that example, how to treat women, how to be the husband or to even be a father, to go to sports games. You know, every time I looked at the bleachers, there was nobody but my mom. And my passion comes from the fact that, you know, we have this ability to, you know, Christ gave the ability for us to know that other people don't have to go through that, right? My kids don't have to go through that. If they do, it's because it's my choice, not who he made me to be. But that's the same way spiritually, is spiritually investing into men to not really just know what we're supposed to be doing, but it's more of what and how. How are we supposed to do it? Because that always stems the question. Like, Brian could stand up there and say, you need to do this, this, and this, and this, and this, and then walk away. So yeah, we have an outline right here. This whole book is an outline for our life, but truly investing, as a father would in a son is to point out the hows. Okay, so we know what we're supposed to be doing, but how do we do that? Like, how do we accomplish it? And of course, everybody's how is different, but going through these little teaching lessons is not to really just for me to pinpoint what we're supposed to do, but it's what we're supposed to do and how we can accomplish it. How can we apply it in our own lives? And so that is the point of the whole thing here is to, you have to be gentle. You know, you're going to have new believers or even people that aren't from Heartland that are going to walk in here, like soccer. You know, Brian could get up there and tell them they're all going to hell. And how many of them do you think will turn around and walk away? Probably, I'm not saying a bunch of them, but there's going to be people that will turn and walk because that's really aggressive. It's a little too aggressive, but it's not a lie. It's just how you display and how you verbally tell that truth, right? It's meeting them where they're at. You just walk around and you be gentle with your words. Christ, you know, yeah, he went in and aggressively flipped over tables. But he also, and we'll learn in this next, actually I'll get to that here in just a second. But it's to the meditation of the heart. It's your heart. Flip over to James real quick. We have just a couple more and then we'll be done. Flip over to James chapter 1 if you have your Bible. James chapter 1, verse 19, it says, wherefore, my beloved brethren, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath, for the wrath of man worketh not the righteousness of God. The heart stems, our heart is full of emotions, right? That's why I don't understand why people tell you to base a big decision off of what does your heart tell you to do. Don't do that. Don't do that. What does Christ tell you to do? Your heart is based off emotions. Your decision that you make right then and there will change because your emotions change, you know, 10 minutes later. So never, you know, of course, I've taught on this before, but don't do that. Don't base a big decision off of what your heart tells you to do. It's pure emotion. Our emotions fluctuate and they're all over the place. But I will say that, that we need to be, I don't know where I was going with that. I totally lost my train of thought here. Anyways, just says, wherefore, my beloved brethren, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, and slow to wrath. I've already said those things. We have to be, hearers of the word, not just doer, or we have to be doers of the word, not just hearing it, which involves the true definition of application. Flip over to John, and we'll wrap it up with these couple of next verses. Flip over to John chapter 13. This is my favorite story of the Bible. Right there along with Peter getting yanked out of the water after he fell in, after he was walking on it. John chapter 13, and many of you might know this story, but we're going to read it. It says, now therefore the feast of the Passover, when Jesus knew that his hour was come, that he should depart out of the world unto the Father, having loved his own which were in the world, he loved them and unto the end. Verse 1 automatically states that Jesus knows these things, all knowing, you know, I can't remember the word they actually use for that. Omniscient. Anyways, he's all-knowing. It says it right there. Not some knowing. He is all-knowing. And then verse 2 it says, and supper being ended, the devil hanging now put in the heart of Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, to betray him. So we see the work of the heart. That's why you can't base things off your heart, is because that's where Satan gets you. He can't get you in your spirit. He gets you in the heart, because it's based off emotions. Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands, and that that he was come from God and went to God, he riseth from supper and laid aside his garments and took a towel and girded himself. After that, he poureth water into a basin and began to wash the disciples' feet and to wipe them with the towel wherewith he was girded. Then cometh to Simon Peter, and Peter said unto him, Lord, dost thou wash my feet? And he said, Jesus answered and said unto him, what I do now knowest not now, but thou shalt know hereafter. Peter said unto him, thou shalt never wash my feet. Jesus answered him, if I wash thee not, thou hast no part with me. The verse 7 that goes back to kind of the long suffering, that we're going to go through things, but we don't know why. In the second part it says, but thou shalt know hereafter. He will reveal it to us eventually in our own time that we need to know it. But just because, you know, I went through this also with a baby Christian, is I want to know the results now. Like, I want to know what you're trying to show me very blatantly. I don't want to just wait. patience is a key thing, but it's knowing that you're in God's hands. And he will get you through that long suffering. Once again, it's shifting your focus to what he's teaching you. You know, you look at Joseph. Joseph went through all of these things, yet his perspective was, this is all God's doing. I went through everything I went through, and Joseph gave God the credit for it. That's what we should be doing, and sometimes that's difficult to see that until way later down the road, and then you're like, yeah, this is that reward of what you went through in that long suffering. This is the outcome, you know, and then you slowly learn to put your full faith and trust in God. But it takes a lot of going through it to get to that. It takes a lot of application. But verse 9 says, Simon Peter saith unto him, Lord, not my feet only, but also my hands and my head. This is a true natural verse of Peter. It's like, you know, people give you an inch and some people take a mile. That's kind of what Peter's doing right now. He's like, oh, you're going to wash my head. Well, you can, or wash my feet, but you can also wash my hands and my head. It's like Christ was given the inch and Peter wants the mile. but that's part of Peter's characteristic really coming to light. And verse 10, it says, Jesus said to him, he that is washed needeth not save to wash his feet, but is clean every whit. And ye are clean, but not all. For ye know ye should betray him. Therefore said he, ye are not all clean. So, this is before, as we read, Christ is all-knowing. The devil got into Judas's heart. And Christ just said right here, for he knew who should betray him, therefore said he, you're not all clean. So he knew that Judas was going to betray him. And this is why this is my favorite story. It says, so after he had washed their feet and had taken his garments and what was set down, again he said unto them, know ye what I have done to you? Ye call me Master and Lord, and ye shall say well, for so I am. If I then, your Lord and Master, have washed your feet, ye also ought to wash another's feet. For I have given you an example that ye should do as I have done to you. Verily, verily, I say unto you, the servant is not greater than his Lord, neither he that is sent greater than he sent him. If you know these things, happy are ye if you do them. I speak not of, that was it. Sorry. So if you know these things, happy are ye if you do them. So back to Christ knew what Judas was going to do, yet he washed his feet anyway. He knew he was going to betray him, but he didn't skip him. He didn't skip Judas in the line. He still cleaned his feet. He still did everything that he did to everyone else. He didn't single Judas out knowing, and it says right there, because he knew what was going to happen. And he knew Judas was going to betray him. He knew Judas's heart was, so to speak, sold to the devil. He knew that Judas was going to betray him and he was going to have to die for that. But yet he still sat there and put the labor in to wash his feet. And that's a huge story for forgiveness, obviously, because I cannot think of something worse happening in your life than somebody betraying you and you getting beaten and put through hell, literally, to get up on a cross and die. you know, I've had a lot of people betray me, but I'm still standing here. I didn't get up on a cross and die. I didn't get whipped. I didn't get beaten. I didn't get humiliated. I just, whatever happened, happened. But that was, my end outcome was not death. Christ was, and yet he still washed his feet. But it's also not, once again, it's not just doing it, but it's this word right here says he was giving you an example. Christ is our example of these things. And once again, Peter going into the water, it's having the faith in Christ to walk on the water and pay attention to him and not what's around him. Yet Peter didn't. He looked around him and he fell on the water after taking a step. Yet Christ was still there to put his hand in the water and pull him out. So, you know, how many times do we fall in the water? You know, whether going back to gentleness, how many times have I fallen in the water by yelling, by cussing, by screaming, you know, wrath, anger, or even actions, getting physically, you know, angry and hitting things? I fall in the water all the time because my heart is based off emotions. And those emotions control my anger. They control my reaction or my response. Or yeah, my reaction instead of my response. My response should be to stop and take a breath. My reaction is just to go full force and not give any time of thought. So that's the part of being gentle. But we have this story here to use that as an example to still wash the feet. You know, we're supposed to be Christ-like. Flip over to 2 Timothy. Second Timothy chapter 2. So I forgot to mention this, but the two Christ-like ways we can apply gentleness is, of course, we went through must have gentle words. I forgot to say that this one is based off we must have gentle actions. And that's the part where washing of the feet came into play, is the gentle actions. So that might make a little more sense now. 2 Timothy chapter 2, verse 24. It says, "And the servant of the Lord must not strive, but be gentle unto all men, apt to teach, and patient, in meekness instructing those that oppose themselves, if God peradventure will give them a repentance to the acknowledging of the truth, and that they may recover themselves out of the snare of the devil, who are taken captive by him at his will." We are to be apt to teach and to be patient. You know, as a discipler, you know, I was once a disciplee. I was once, you know, our family, or Holly and I were discipled by Paige and Jason, or Jason and Paige McGuire. Took almost 3 years. I mean, we did have a lot of kids. We had three kids in between there, or four. So when we started, we just had Bryson. And then, you know, shortly after we had Felix, and then we really shortly after had Cleo, and then really, really shortly after I had the twins. We were done with discipleship after Cleo, but before the twins. So in that year, we were done with discipleship. And then we jumped right into D2, and then right into how to disciple, and then right into HPI. So there was a lot going on in that life, but that's what we needed, right? We didn't need that downtime, because that downtime would have really given the adversary time to get into us and say, "Hey, like, why are you guys really doing this? This is, you're not doing anything profitable. You're just wasting your time." Right, so some people, we are just that way. We didn't need that downtime to think things over. We need, you know, and God just moved us from one place to the next quickly. But unto all men apt to teach and be patient, that's our actions. We need to be physically patient with people, because, you know, I've discipled a couple of people, and I've had to learn that they're not on the same level that I am, or even not now. Like, I'm not putting myself on a pedestal, but it's then. They're not the same person that I was when I was going through D1 as well. Like, Jason had to have a lot of patience with us. You know, it took a very long time to get through it. There were some weeks we didn't even meet. There were some times we just met for dinner and just talked life. And I bet you Jason was sitting across the table going, "Why are they not getting this? Like, what?" What is the problem? Like, are we not explaining this enough? You know, I've literally had to sit back and go, this is exactly, it humbled me. Let me just put it that way. It humbled me to know that this is what everybody goes through, because baby Christians are all different. Everybody grows differently. Everybody learns differently. Bryson, that's going to fall in the cup. Stop. Everybody learns differently. So you have to really be patient and meet that person where they are. And that's just the way it is. But that's the point of the 2 Timothy verse, is to be apt to teach and patient in meekness, instructing those that oppose themselves. If God, peradventure, will give them repentance to acknowledging of the truth. Allow God to show them the truth, not you. You are just a vessel of words and actions. Be patient and allow God to show them exactly what they need to see and what they need to hear. There was a lot of times going through D1 that we didn't go from one lesson to the next immediately. You know, God had to apply the one lesson of things in my life personally, which I'm glad that happened, because then I was able to fully understand what He was teaching us and where He was taking us and what we were supposed to be doing. If Jason were to just go from one lesson to the next with nothing, that's all it is just going through them. There's no application involved. But it's to have that patience and to truly see God work in that person's life. To wrap this up in conclusion, flip over to Isaiah chapter 40. I got two more verses and then we're done. Isaiah chapter 40. Eventually. Wow. Sorry, these are like really stuck together. There we go. Chapter 40, verse 11. It says, "He shall feed his flock like a shepherd. He shall gather the lambs with his arm and carry them in his bosom, and shall gently lead those that are with the young." Gently lead. We are to be gentle leaders. So it's not just our words and just our actions. We're to gently lead as Christ gently led his disciples and everyone that he taught. Real quick, flip over to Matthew chapter 11. This will be the last time. So we're to gently lead. Matthew 11, 29 says, "Take my yoke upon you and learn of me, for I am meek and lowly in heart, and ye shall find rest unto your souls." And then verse 30 says, "For my yoke is easy and my burden is light." We are to rest in Him, but we are to gently do these things. We are to be gentle and calm and to be able to effectively serve Christ in His kingdom. Not to be, you know, wrapped in your emotions. Don't, you know, this is what I taught. It was a couple years ago when we first started doing a series in Men's Breakfast. I taught using Adam and Eve on reaction versus response. And, you know, of course you have Adam and Eve who ate from the tree, and their reaction was to go and hide. That's just simple as that. They went, they ate of the fruit, they were embarrassed, they went and hide. Look at Abraham when he had to go kill his son. He said, okay. Got up the next morning and went to go kill his son, because that's what he was told to do. You have Adam's reaction, which is spontaneous. You have Abraham's response when it comes to taking time to obey. It's taking time when something happens to take a breath and say, okay, we're going to go through this. That's what we are to do. We are to respond to situations and to be gentle. It takes that response. It doesn't take a reaction. It takes a response to simply do it. So that is what I have today. And sorry, I know I wasn't trying to rush through it, but like I said, I'm on a time frame. but yeah, so we're supposed to be gentle. We're supposed to just apply these things. You guys have any prayer requests or anything that we can jot down real quick or pray over? Everybody doing all right? Yes, sir.
I just wanted to add one thing that the Lord just showed me.